Hello and welcome to the Rising Ecosystems podcast from FDI Intelligence, which explores the opportunities and challenges facing startups in cities around the world. I'm your host, Alex Owen Hunt, and while we began by covering startup scenes in the UK, our recent episodes looked into Europe, where we interviewed prominent entrepreneurs in both Vienna and Berlin about their experiences scaling businesses in those cities. In the last episode, I spoke with Tao Tao, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Get Your Guide, which is an experienced booking platform based in Berlin. Tao discussed the pandemic's impact on global tourism, Berlin's development as a tech hub, and also where he thinks the ecosystem could be improved. If you liked that episode and others in the series, please leave us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. But in this episode, I look into the startup ecosystem of Turkey's largest city, Istanbul. As a city that is home to 16 million people and straddles two continents, Istanbul is perhaps best known for its rich history, culture, and culinary offering. But more recently, the city has made headlines for another reason: its startups. Istanbul's tech scene has quickly become better known thanks to successes such as gaming unicorn Peak Games, as well as big startup exits like Hepsi Barada, an online shopping platform which in July 2021 became the first Turkish company to list on the Nasdaq stock exchange. But to find out more what it's really like in Istanbul's startup scene, back in August, I spoke to one of the city's most prominent entrepreneurs, Nazim Sulur, who is the co-founder and CEO of delivery app Getir, which is valued at $7.5 billion. Founded in 2015, Getir pioneered the 10-minute grocery delivery model, which uses a network of dark stores to deliver groceries directly to consumers. Getir has shown how tech innovation can originate from anywhere in the world and quickly become ubiquitous, with several other startups now replicating its same model. Nazim himself has been a serial entrepreneur for 25 years, first beginning his tech journey in 2012 when he founded ride-hailing app ByTaxi, going on 3 years later to found Getir. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Nazim about Getir's journey and Istanbul's startup scene. Nazim, welcome to the Rising Ecosystem podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd like to start by touching on the business that Getir is in. Obviously, the on-demand grocery delivery market is a very competitive space, and there's several players fighting for market share and new players emerging seemingly every month at the moment. I wonder if you could start by giving your outlook for the grocery delivery market, and then more specifically, what makes Getir stand out from the crowd?
Well, everybody thinks there's big competition out there. I beg to differ, because if you look at the amount of groceries sold in any given country and the amount of digital grocery sales, it's still a small percentage. And the super fast delivery model that we came up with 6 years ago, which we pioneered, is just a little fraction of that digital grocery sales. So it doesn't matter how many players are coming up to the market. Even the total of everyone is still a little fraction of total grocery sales. And even with the digital grocery sales, it's still quite new. So I believe the future is very promising in this sector, because when you can deliver groceries in about 10 minutes or so, this is faster than a consumer can do it on his own. And this changes the game. It's not just selling groceries. This is actually, we're selling convenience. What we're selling is time. The groceries are a secondary product. And everybody thinks we sell groceries, but groceries have been everywhere. I mean, for hundreds of years, shops were selling groceries. People were buying groceries. So we didn't create selling groceries. But having it in about 10 minutes at your door, that's the idea we come up with. And it changes things. It does. More and more people are going to use this. And there will be room for more than one player in any market. Will there be room for 10 or 20 players in a single market? Probably not, but I definitely believe there'll be room for a few players.
Well, it's great to hear your positive outlook, but and of course, lots of us around the world have used Getir and other services while we've been in COVID-19 related lockdowns and movement restrictions. You know, one argument made is that there might have been a boom in this sort of delivery services during the pandemic, but it sounds like you're expecting that to continue.
Yes, because we came up with the idea 6 years ago. There was no COVID. I mean, COVID has been with us last 15, 16 months. So we were growing before COVID. In some years, we were growing fourfold in Turkey. So the real boost here is the convenience it creates. Of course, the COVID situation accelerated growth to some extent. But then growth is going to be there after COVID. At least that's what we see in Turkey. We still grow. Life is pretty much back to normal now, and business can still grow.
Fantastic to hear. Now, back in June, you raised a large Series D funding round, $555 million at a valuation of $7.5 billion. Congratulations, first.
Thank you.
I'm very keen to hear how you plan to use this funding, particularly given the 10-minute grocery model, delivery model you have that involves dark stores and lots of infrastructure, I suppose. So what are your plans to use this funding?
Actually, we raised about $1 billion this year. I mean, like this was three rounds in a row. We raised like 128 and then 300 and then 555 2 months after each other. So in about 4 months, we did three rounds, which is not something I planned for starting this year, but the market situation enabled us to do that. So we decided to move faster to into the new markets, and we did three rounds in a row. And so the proceeds of this will go to mainly new markets, but also will go for further growth in our existing markets, which is the biggest market we operate is in Turkey still. But the other new markets are ramping up pretty quickly. We're now operational in the UK, Germany, France, and Netherlands. And we just bought a company in Spain. And Spain and Italy and Portugal will be operational within a few months. So we'll be covering... will be operational in 8 countries in Europe. And then by before the end of the year, we'll be operational in the United States. So we will, before the end of the year, we will have 9 countries that we're operating. So that's a lot to do, actually, a lot to spend. A lot of growth is expecting us. We will spend the money wisely. Look, there's this idea that because companies like us can raise money easily at this time, they will just use it foolishly, maybe, you know. That's not the case with us. I mean, like, I don't know what others are doing, but we are a reasonable company which spends its funds wisely. That's... I mean, we will spend it when we need to, but at certain times we will also be very disciplined, and because we are in this game for the long run, and we're not here to just do something quickly and then, you know, try to exit the game within a year or two. That's not our game. We're here for the long run. So if we do something wrong today, we know that'll alert us in the future. We try not to do any mistakes, big mistakes, that's going to hurt us along the way. With the 6-year knowledge we built, I think we will spend the money we have very wisely.
That's good to know. And I'd love to dig a bit deeper into the Turkish ecosystem, and we'll get onto that. But with the US expansion, what are the plans there? Are you focusing on specific metro areas? And what do you see as the sort of main challenges and opportunities to expanding into the US?
Yeah, we will start with New York, Chicago, and Boston. Before the end of the year, we'll be operational in these three cities. So and then we'll take it from there. I mean, and then we should be able to move to other cities next year. You know, I lived in the U.S. in the 90s and early 2000s. I spent quite a bit of time there myself and with my family. So U.S. is the market after Turkey I know most about. So I don't think it will be that big of a challenge for us. This service will be welcomed by the U.S. consumer. I have big trust in this. And there will be competition. Some other competitors are emerging in some markets. And probably there'll be more within the next few years. It'll be fun.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with that expansion. And I'm sure lots of our US listeners will be looking forward to using Getir's services in the future. But as you say, you've had quite an illustrious career between Turkey and the US, multinationals, and then becoming a serial entrepreneur, starting off by launching Bytaxi, the ride-hailing app in Turkey, and then going on to launch Getir in 2015. So you really have been at the forefront of entrepreneurship in Turkey, and being based in Istanbul, so Istanbul's development as a startup ecosystem. I'd love if you could just describe sort of the timeline of Istanbul's development as a location to start and grow a business since you began your entrepreneurial journey.
Actually, I'm not one of the early ones. I came into this market a little later than many others. I mean, Istanbul's ecosystem started, the tech ecosystem started around 20 years ago, you know, early 2000. Somewhere there, the first startups, successful ones, were emerging. And then I came in 2012, actually, 12 years later. So I've been in this scene last 8 years. And it has been a fantastic run for me. I really enjoyed what we were able to achieve. And the thing we did differently with Getir is this, okay? There were other startups, successful startups, that were founded before Bytaxi or Getir. So we're not the only one, and that's a good thing for the country. But what differentiates Getir from many others, including my earlier startup, is it's a unique idea. It's an original idea. All the rest, pretty much, were successful clones of existing ideas around the world. So something starts flying in the US or Europe or Asia somewhere. And then actually this is true for many startups. I mean, like maybe 90% of the startups are clones of the originals. I mean, like, and sometimes the originals, if they do a good job, they stay the strongest in the market. Sometimes the newcomers do a better job and you even forget who the original idea came from, okay? So it works both ways. So if an idea is good, others are going to clone you. And we are an idea coming from Turkey being cloned all around the world. I counted more than 20 the other day, 20 startups trying to do exactly what Getir does. And that kind of gives me some pride. You know, it's good. People are going to clone because we're doing something good and they think they can do a better job than we do. So be it. I mean, maybe they will, maybe they won't, but we're far ahead with 6 years of experience. So we should just keep our pace and stay the leader in this industry.
Definitely. It's gratifying to see your model and idea being recreated by other ambitious entrepreneurs. But to dig a bit deeper into the Turkish ecosystem, of course, Getir is a standout example, but you've mentioned that there were several startups prior to Getir's founding. Also, you know, there's been some big exits such as Peak Games last year, which was acquired by Zynga for $1.8 billion. I wonder, given some of these success stories, what you think makes the Istanbul and broader Turkish ecosystem special compared to its peers in Europe and Asia?
Look, the demographics of Istanbul has a very promising thing for startups like us, okay? First of all, it's a city of 16 million. So in Europe, some countries the whole country is not even 16 million. You know, a lot of countries have less population than 16 million. So you have all these people in one metropolitan area. So if you're doing something for the consumer, you have this crowd right there in front of you. And if you're doing something like Getir or our B-Taxi business, something with logistics, in-city logistics, Istanbul is even better being a test case city because it's so challenging. The traffic is crazy. It's one of the worst in Europe. And it's a historic city, narrow streets. There's a sea passage dividing the city into two. It's a hilly city. There's some modern parts of the city, still huge traffic. And if you can succeed in Istanbul in a business like Getir, you already passed the tests for the whole world, actually. Istanbul has four equal seasons, so the summer will be hot. We will get some snow in the winter, so you will know how to drive in the snow, and you will know chocolate will melt in a van in the heat. So you have to come up with solutions to that. So if you go to a hot climate or a cold climate, doing business in Istanbul will get you ready for that. So anything logistics, starting in Istanbul, has a distinct advantage, I think. And that's why when we took Getir to these other countries, I'm pleased to say it was much less challenging than Istanbul. I mean, London, Paris, Berlin, and Amsterdam, specifically Amsterdam, is much less challenging compared to Istanbul. So if you do the hard one first, then the other ones seem a little easier.
That's great to hear that as Istanbul works well as a testbed, given the challenges there. When we look more broadly at sort of the tech ecosystem, you mentioned a city of 16 million. What's your assessment of the tech talent, the engineering talent in Istanbul? How does it compare to some of your employees, presumably spread across the world? Is it cost effective? Do you believe there is a strong community emerging in Istanbul?
Yes and no, because with tech talent, with remote work capabilities today, there are no borders for tech talent. So a guy can live in Istanbul and work for an American company or Australian company, whatever. So the cost advantage, because it's a lower cost country, is there, but that is a diminishing advantage every year. Okay. And rightfully so. I mean, like, if there are no borders, prices are going to adjust accordingly. And in the tech talent part, we see that. I mean, the annual increases for tech talent is much, much higher every year than the inflation here, trying to catch up with the world markets. But still, it's a lot less to some of the more mature markets, but the difference is a decreasing difference. And we now hire talent from all around. I mean, the other week we looked at, people, how many countries. There were 37 people working from 37 different countries in Getir at the moment. And I hope there'll be 137 within a few years. I mean, like, we'll be open to everyone who shares our values to work with Getir in the future. So, the young population, the 18-35 part of the population in Istanbul and Turkey is much bigger than what it is in Europe. So this population, this demographics, is much more open to new things. They try new things much faster than the other demographics. So if you have something good in Turkey, the ramp up will be much faster compared to some other countries in Europe. And credit card penetration is very high, and smartphone usage is very high also.
So perfect for a company such as Getir. So lots of positives clearly to starting and growing a business in Turkey, as you say, demographics. Some of the challenges on the ground in Istanbul have enabled you to create better solutions. But of course, like any ecosystem, there's always room for improvement. I wonder what you see as the main stumbling blocks to entrepreneurs in Istanbul and Turkey more broadly, and what's needed to really push forward the ecosystem?
That's a good question, because until now, what I said paints like a pink picture. You know, the picture is not pink, actually. I mean, like, it's we have the challenges. First of all, the Turkish economy goes up and down. Last 5-6 years, there were many ups and downs. So this scares international investors who would likely invest in Turkish companies. They think twice, and sometimes they change their mind. They think Turkey is too risky. Compared to some other countries, yes, Turkey may look risky, but long term, I believe it's less risky than they presume what it is. And the brave ones who invest in Turkey had seen great multiples in the companies they invested. So there are good examples, not only Getir, but a few others are giving great multiples to their early investors. So I hereby should invite potential investors, more investors looking at Turkey, a Turkish ecosystem, as a cold or lukewarm, to be more warm investing in Turkish companies, because there'll be more coming, more success stories will be coming. A few stories, a few success stories gives thousands of new entrepreneurs courage to get into new exciting, you know, startups will emerge because of this. And in the next few years, we will see more coming. Access to money, access to funds is very limited in Turkey. That's the biggest challenge. Compared to, let's say, US, a good startup's likelihood of getting the right amount of investment in the early stages is so hard compared to US. I mean, like, you have to be a great company with a great idea, great execution, and still you may not be able to get the funds in Turkey. If you do, you have a great idea with great team and you execute greatly, you won't go to waste in the Western Hemisphere. Here, you may or you may not succeed. It's still flip of the coin, all right? So because you're talking to Getir, this is one of the successful ones. There are other ones who could have been much more successful had they had the chance to raise more money. And a lot of the startups in the first 20 years were sold too early at very low valuations, you know. And then they become bigger companies, but the founders who founded them either own nothing or very little, single-digit percentage points in those companies. So we not only need more successful companies, but we also need more of those companies to be owned by the founders, to a bigger percentage of the companies to be owned by the founders. So I'd like to add here, what differentiates Getir from many other startups is also we, the founders, still have more than 50% of the company, even after this 7.5 billion round. So that is not a common practice in our world. So we not only grew the company, we managed to try to keep more of it to ourselves too.
That's great to hear. And I'm sure when you do eventually exit, given your pathway, then that will be very, very lucrative for you. So you mentioned funding.
Let me interrupt you there. Exit, like you say, we have to exit. Why do I have to exit?
It's a good point. I mean, there is no necessity, but
there's no necessity. Okay, if you need money, you can sell 1% of the company. Still, you can live a rich life. You don't need to sell the company. You know, some great companies, the founders don't sell their companies. They just sell just a little to keep them warm, whatever their needs, and then they still own the company. So I'd like to say to the young entrepreneurs, exit is not the only way in a startup. You can still own your company 20 years later. That's another way to look at it.
Well, you heard it here first from Nazim, that budding entrepreneurs, don't give away too much of your equity. You mentioned funding, and clearly that's one area that could be improved. But I wonder more broadly about sort of the infrastructure that's available for entrepreneurs and what maybe can be done to plug this gap. I mean, when you look at ecosystems across the globe, there are public funding schemes. You know, pension funds may allocate more money towards venture funding, which then feeds through to the ecosystem. Do you think more can be done by the public sector or academic sector in Turkey to fuel the ecosystem further?
No. There's some public funding, small amounts to thousands of startups. But I don't think that exactly does the trick. What we need is private funding. And if the public funding is going to be there, public funds should fund the funds who know the startup ecosystem. Let's say I own a fund and I'm from the sector. The government can fund my fund 80%. I put 20%, government can put 80%. I'll better judge on what startup has a better chance of success than, let's say, a university professor as a jury. I respect all the professors, don't get me wrong, but the startup scene has no one formula of success. It's a little, deciding on what to invest is a little science, but more an art, I think. You have to get a feeling whether that's going to fly or not. Look at the face of the entrepreneur, the founder, and feel that if that thing is going to fly within the next 5 years or 10 years, or are we in the right time for that? There's so many different things when deciding on investing in a startup. So it can't be really formulated. It's just that some people feel that it's the right thing to do. Some don't. We don't need to reinvent the wheel, okay? The most successful country in this is U.S., so how many public funds are available for U.S. entrepreneurs? Very little. I believe more than 90% of startups get funded by private investors, and that's how it should be.
It's a very good point. Now, a penultimate question, Nazim. Of course, Getir runs sort of a gig economy platform where your riders are offered flexibility, and clearly there is some regulatory kickback on that form of work, and there's continuing concerns about workers' rights and perhaps the stability of their work. How do you see the future of Getir as a platform for its workers, and what do you see as sort of the main developments moving forward, and what you sort of envision as Getir as an employer of people around the world?
Look, Getir is positioned to offer full-time employment with sick leave and paid holidays and so forth in any country it operates, okay? So whether through itself or whether through its franchisees. So we're not scared to offer full-time employment. And most of our employees in Turkey through the franchise system are full-time employees. But there's also some contract workers. If a person wants to choose the contract work, we should be able to give that person the right for contract work, but we shouldn't push that person to do contract work. So it should be a choice. Okay, so that's our attitude. And because for some people, this kind of career work is a work they want to do just for a few months maybe, or in between jobs, or if they're students paying for tuition or something, they don't look at it as a career. And that's okay. They should be able to work part-time or for just a few months or half a year. And these people aren't after the paid holidays and stuff like that, okay? And they want to make more money in the short term. So they should have that chance. And then just as people working in supermarkets, doing the shelves, the cashiers, or the truck drivers working in a logistics company for many years, or taxi drivers, who take this as a serious job. If somebody wants to be a career to work at Getir next 5 years, he should be able to work next 5 years at Getir as a career And you should get all the rights of a regular employee. That's how we look at it. And I'm having difficulty understanding all these other delivery companies creating an atmosphere as if contract work, if it's not gig economy, they will all fail. I beg to differ. I think giving workers option to do both creates loyalty and makes our business more sustainable for the future. This business of delivery shouldn't be modern day slavery, okay? I read some articles calling some work conditions as that. But with Getir model, here's what we do. We open dark stores, and when we plan a dark store, the first thing we do is draw up a room where these couriers are gonna sit if they're not doing deliveries, so they can have a cup of tea or coffee, and the bathroom they're gonna use, okay? So that's the first thing we do in a warehouse. And this contract work, all these other food delivery companies where they don't care what this guy does under the sun or the rain or cold or hot, whatever. So they just send them a note over their phones and go pick this up and deliver it to this address. And they don't really mind how that guy works. I don't think that's a good model. Okay, so we at Getir, we want our couriers to work as long as possible with us. So we create much better working conditions. And I think that should be the industry standard going forward.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. And it, as you say, I mean, this the continual kickback from entrepreneurs and heads of other delivery companies and gig economy platforms are that, you know, this is not a sustainable business model. But it's very gratifying to hear that in fact, it is from Getir's experience. I mean, is it about how careful you've been with your funds in terms of moving forward and the structure and business model you're approaching that means that you are able to offer this versus other platforms?
Our business is a little different compared to others. But the thing is, in some countries, there's this mentality that, you know, somebody says something and people start believing it. Nobody questions it. Okay. So, like, after our first year, I went to talk to some Silicon Valley investors. So this was 2016. They said 10-minute delivery, great idea. And then the next two questions they asked, do you keep inventory? I said, yes. Nobody liked that. And then how do you employ the people? I said, we employ them. They didn't like that. So nobody wanted employers and nobody wanted inventory. Okay. So those were the two sins at the time. Nobody wanted to invest in us, not even at a cheap valuation. No was the answer we got. And they thought we will go bankrupt. But Getir is here because it carries inventory and because it has a sustainable model where couriers can work for a long time. Okay, so it's a contrarian startup, opposite to the common belief that it won't work if it's not contract work. Look, these companies and us too in the new markets, we burn money until we don't. Okay, so like this is not. This is like a fruit tree, like the first fruit you get in maybe 5 years, 7 years. You're not going to get it in 3 months, all right? This is not like cucumber farming where you get the results in 3 months. This is a fruit tree we're building. So we got to be patient, spend money before we get the results. And during that time, of course, I understand they want to spend the least amount and they want to have the least liabilities in anything if things go south. I understand that. But then those fears are not going to build sustainable businesses. Look, Amazon is a great company. They employ people. Did they go bankrupt because they employ people? No.
Yeah. So being contrarian clearly is working in Getty's favor, and I'm very, very happy to hear that you've got your workers' rights front of mind, and it's fantastic to hear you be so candid, Nazim. Thank you so much. Now, to round off our conversation, we've covered a lot about Getty's journey, your plans for the future, and Istanbul's ecosystem. I wonder if there's just one main message you want to get across to our listeners across the globe about Getty's journey and Istanbul as a location to start and grow a business.
Yeah, here's the thing. Getty is a nice example that good ideas can come from any part of the world, okay? So not only some countries that most good ideas come from, and this diversification of countries will be very good for the whole world. So we expect more good idea startups from all the developing countries. To people who listen to us, don't think I can't do this. Think I can do it. Why not me? And it's so much more fun to do something original than clone something that's already done. Cloning is now still challenging because, like, just looking at it, you're not going to be able to do it. You still have the challenges, but try to come up with something that's not done. And it is very challenging, very self-fulfilling. I'm glad I had the chance to do Getty, and I'm glad. I mean, we worked very hard. It was a good idea. We had a good team, but also you need luck also. I mean, like, luck plays some part in this timing and so forth. So I'm also a lucky guy that things turned out the way they did. And I'm looking forward to bring it to many more countries in the next few years and make it a household name in the countries it serves.
Well, there was my conversation with Nazim Salur of Getty. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I found him to be refreshingly candid about some of the challenges facing entrepreneurs in Istanbul, notably funding, but also some of the advantages Getty has found from scaling and testing their model in Istanbul. If you'd like to look into more of our content, you can feel free to go to fdiintelligence.com, where you'll find a host of stories about startups, foreign direct investment, and economic development. That's all from me for this episode. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you next time.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.